Here with Sharon Rowe. She is the CEO and founder of EcoVadis Products, which grew to become a $2.2 million business. Welcome, Sharon. Thank you so much for being able to join us today.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having me as a guest. I'm just thrilled.
We love the opportunity to be able to speak to kick-butt ladies like yourself, and we definitely just want to dive into to some of the work that you're doing. I know that you've been profiled in Time Magazine as a force for change in 2007. Obviously, you know, you pioneered the reusable bag movement. When you were little Sharon, okay, you're little Sharon in New York City, you know, did you grow up in New York City?
No, I grew up actually in Connecticut, in central Connecticut, right outside of Hartford.
Were you born in New York?
Nope. My mom was born in New York. She was born in the South Bronx and then moved to Queens, to Forest Hills.
Oh.
My dad was from New Jersey, I think. His family came over. They came over through Ellis Island, and then they wound up in Connecticut and Rhode Island.
Oh, nice. So when you're growing up on the East Coast, you know, you're a little girl.
Mm-hmm.
Is this who Sharon, that little Sharon, dreamed of being today? Who you are today?
No, not at all. Are you kidding? I mean, that's a great question because who knows? But at some point in my life, I decided I wanted to be an actress. I think I was trying to remember the name of the play. Oh, Andorra. I just got it. Oh, that's so good. Yeah, Brian Friel, I think, was the playwright. But anyway, I did a play. I think I was in sixth grade, and I really loved it. And I decided I was going to be an actress. You know, I was going to be an actress. He was going to learn to fly.
Anyway. And so you continued on that road.
Yeah, I did. I totally continued on that road. I mean, I did lots of plays in high school. I was a jazz dancer. And,
oh, wow.
Yeah, and then I went off to college. I didn't actually go to a theater college. I went to a school where I could get some financial aid, but I did study there. Theater there, and we did a lot of theater. And then I was lucky enough to find the Eugene O'Neill Theater Center in Connecticut, and that's actually where Lin-Manuel workshopped his plays. And I went there for the Theater Institute, and then after that, after school, I went down to Washington, D.C., and I was part of a theater company there, and I also performed there, and then I moved to New York and continued to perform, you know, all the while having lots and lots of jobs to support myself. But yeah, that's where I started.
Oh, wow. And so I want to talk a little bit about how you were led to start the EcoBag company, because what I think is interesting is right now, you know, social entrepreneurship is really cool, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so, but back in the 80s, I felt like when I was growing up, it was all like, okay, you're in business to make money. You focus on making a profit, you know? And I remember being a kid, suddenly people started talking about recyclables.
It wasn't
always this mainstream conversation. How did you start this business in the 80s where a lot of people weren't really thinking about being eco-friendly? And how was the idea received at the time?
Okay. So I started in 1989. I think I was inspired. In fact, I know I was inspired by Pete Seeger and the Clearwater Organization in terms of clear water, clean water, and the environmental movement. But I wasn't really much of an activist. Why I started, I just got fed up myself with, you know, flimsy single-use plastic bags breaking and my stuff spilling out all over the sidewalk. You know, I had an infant in a stroller, and there I am in Washington Heights, you know, running after apples down the street. And I just thought, this is just ridiculous. I don't want to do this anymore. So I didn't really have, like, the market survey approach, you know. I basically said, I don't like this. I'm not going to do it. And I started bringing my own bag to the store, and other people started making comments about it. And then I was really lucky that I basically heard about Earth Day, which I'd never even heard of it before. And it was happening in 1990 in April, and I did an Earth Day fair on Sixth Avenue. And we got such a good response to the products that I was premiering that we knew we were onto something. But it was we were at least 10 years before the conversation even started. We were way ahead of the market. So we were out there talking about something that nobody else was really talking about, and we wound up very naturally in the natural products industry as a vertical. And that's where most of the progressive conversations were happening. So some people got it. Not even all of them. I mean, I would go to trade shows and they'd be like, why? What? you get free bags at the store, you know. And these are organic people. And I'd be like, no, no, there's plastic waste. And there was no science behind it. There was no reporting. There was no movement.
Right.
We simply started and stuck to our guns and realized that we were onto something and that everyone would have to catch up with us.
That is amazing. And so this was something that, I guess, literally, as you were saying, you started out of your house. Now,
oh, yeah.
How many employees do you guys have?
Well, we're still not really big. I mean, we have five employees here, which is why, you know, in the book that I'm is going to be released, The Magic of Tiny Business, I really talk about being lean. We have five people here, and we're using basically the same structure as we did when we started, and I was only one person, which is... Mm-hmm. We have partners that we work with. They're not on my payroll, but we have long-term partnerships with our printer, with our manufacturers. We've been working with them for about 26-plus years. So it's like we're part of one company, except we're not all under one roof, and we're not all under one in one entity. And that allows us to be really flexible and to grow as we want to and shrink when we need to.
Yeah, and I'm sure I keep your overhead costs down and stuff like that, which is just smart and good business.
Exactly. I mean, it's basically a model that everyone's using now. I mean, if you look at the breakout of Uber and all these other things, there's sort of a dissemination. You know, there's a breaking out of all the different parts, but we'd been doing that. And actually, honestly, in the olden days, it was just called freelance. Right?
Right, right. Exactly.
Now it's, or independent contractor. It's really the same thing, except when I started, I didn't have the internet.
right.
I mean, there was some email. That's about it. So I had to literally knock on doors and make phone calls.
Right.
And the business grew really slowly, intentionally and slowly. And because it grew slowly, you know, I had more time with my family. But I still worked 8-hour days, and I put in my due diligence, and we just cut back in other areas. You know, we kept our overhead low, our personal overhead low, for years.
You touched on your new book. It's coming out in May, correct?
Yes.
Yep. The Magic of Tiny Business, and it shows entrepreneurs or those considering, starting a business, how to test a concept, manage money and priorities and more, while staying true to the tiny ethos. The book is available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, IndieBound, and iBooks. Totally check it out, ladies. What have you learned about business, and what has business taught you about yourself?
Well, what I've learned about business is that it's an excellent platform to be heard, to, you know, create the change that you want to see in the world, and to support yourself, and that you can build something profitable and sustainable if you stay focused on what you value most. If you include yourself in the equation, in the business equation, you're not going to work yourself to death. I mean, you can create, if you're very disciplined, and, you know, discipline comes through practice, so you have to practice practicing, you can create something that's meaningful and, and gives you a return. I like to say, you know, make your work for you. It doesn't happen right away. It happens over time. What I've learned is that persistence and patience pays off. Persistence and patience pays off. And when you get impatient, which, trust me, I got impatient a lot, it's really good to quit what you're doing. And then that allows you to step back and have a more of a bird's eye view of what you're doing. Go for a job interview. Go do something else so that you can evaluate where you are. Chances are you're going to come right back to what you're doing. You may come back to it with a different perspective, which is a good thing. But sometimes you can't see where, if you're so deep in the weeds, you can't see it, right? You got to get up and look in on it. So I've really learned to trust the process. But trusting the process also means trusting your, being really on top of your cash flow. It's, business, the energy for business is you and cash flow.
So good. Oh, I love that advice.
Yeah. I think I'm trying to remember her name, but I was interviewed for WBAI Radio, and, you know, I said, without profit, you cannot proceed.
Without profit, and, you cannot proceed.
Yeah, that's, you that's need great, profit. And profit is not what you pay yourself, right?
Right.
You may pay yourself out of some profit, but you don't pay yourself profit. You give yourself compensation, and you allow your profit to accrue as an asset, and then you use that asset to leverage and build what you want to build.
Right.
I didn't learn that till a lot, many years in. I have to tell you, I made every mistake possible.
I don't hear a lot of people talking about that, about not paying yourself out of profit. That is, I like that. I'm going to have to bring you back on so we can just have a conversation around that alone.
Yeah. I mean, I guess essentially you are paying yourself out of profit, but if you take it off as an expense at the top.
Right.
Right? You're paying yourself out of gross profit, but you're not paying yourself out of net profit. So what you're looking for is net profit, because that's the thing that allows you to reinvest in your business. That's the thing that, you know, if, let's say you're a freelancer, because this is where it's different. Let's say you're a freelancer and you made $100, right? Or let's say you have your business and you have $100. You pay yourself $100, but then an opportunity comes along for you to put an ad in something. Well, you just spent that $100.
Right.
You got nothing left over. You know, you have to say, okay, I made $100, and of that $100, my percentage compensation is X. So you pay yourself, let's say, $40. Well, you're left with $60 as your asset, which now you can take and use to do whatever and still have something left over.
Right.
And every business is different, you know, in terms of how much you should flow to the bottom.
Right. Before I let you go, if a listener wants to find more information about you, about EcoBags, book you as a speaker, I know that you know you released this book, so you may be doing some book tour stops and stuff like that. Where can they go to find out more information about you?
The easiest thing to do is go to my website, which is Sharon Rowe, R-O-W with an E, R-O-W-E.com. But I'm also, you can find me through EcoBags.com. And you can also find me on LinkedIn. Please follow me on Instagram, Sharon Rowe, R-O-W-E, _ on Instagram. And I'm on Facebook, too, at Sharon Feldman Rowe.
Sharon, thank you so much for joining us on Amplified today. We totally appreciate your time and love your story.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I mean, this is great. I just like getting the word out because I think more people are on the fence with regards to business, and it can be actually a stage. It's a platform. It's a very viable way to make a living and have some fun doing it.